The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm a domestic type. I don't really get out too much.
Radio X. This is your Evening Show podcast with me, Gordon Smart, and producer Vin.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Tell you what, Vin, you've kept it together this week in trying circumstances.
Yeah, but you make it sound bad. I mean,
well,
it was a great week to have.
I think we both ripped the wrapper off it the week before, so we were just being held together by
threads. Monday was tender, wasn't it?
And we came in on Monday a little bit tender, both of us kind of battling through, and we had great guests, didn't we? Starting with Ricky Gervais, who was talking about Afterlife. If you haven't seen it yet, and you're tuning into this somewhere on a commute, and you're looking for something to watch, go and check out Netflix and Afterlife. Ricky was brilliant as well, wasn't he?
It's a funny... Well, he said himself, literally the best interview he's ever done.
Oh, that was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Before he walked in, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to swear a lot today. Because I think he might go for it. And he did, didn't he?
He did.
Just really got involved. As well as that, Kelly Jones celebrating Performance and Cocktails, the 20th anniversary, which will probably make a lot of you listening feel very old.
Well,
or some
we had
of you
one,
very young.
One great message from me, you said... They used to listen to it with their son when he was three years old. He's 23 now.
My other favourite message was about the guy who bought it on the... And the receipt just was performance and then cocktail was cut short with only four letters. And his missus at the time fell out with him because it had a slightly different meaning, didn't it?
Yeah, you'd think he'd bought something else then.
Correct. So yeah, Kelly Jones, Ricky Gervais, and then Jade Bird as well, who spoke to us from a diner. It was like Thelma and Louise, wasn't it?
She was great. She's got an excellent new tune. And then loads of comedians as well.
Yes, God, Alex Horn.
As well as Ricky, yeah.
Yeah, as well as Ricky, Alex Horn from Taskmaster. And you might know him from the Horn section as well. Mm-hmm. He's brilliant company. And I know him from Bad Golf. As well as that, we've got Simon Amstel, who is coming back as a film director. Listening to that as well, because he's a bright boy, isn't he?
Yeah. Very, very nice chat. And classic albums from The Strokes as well.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Room on Fire from 2003. Brilliant music, great guests, and me and Vin giggling all the way through. Really hope you enjoy it. And if you do, leave us a little review.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
I'm Gordon Smart, and this is The Evening Show. Thank you for joining us tonight. Ricky Gervais is on the show. You've probably seen the reviews for Afterlife, his new Netflix series. They're getting brilliant five-star thumbs up from everybody across the board. Couldn't Liam Gallagher today. He was saying he loved it. Anyway, a few days back, Ricky Gervais popped in to talk all about it. So if you don't know what it is, it's a six-parter, six half-hour episodes, all about Ricky. His character is very upset after his wife has passed away. But where there is misery, there is also huge, huge humour. Terrible industrial language, workplace bullying, dogs, mortality, everything in there. It's absolutely magical. The cast, superb as well. So, when Ricky popped in, I thought I'd start with a little bit of free speech of my own. I'm Gordon Smart, this is Radio X, and I'm joined by a fat little Santa with rosy cheeks, star of the 11 o'clock show, annoyingly successful, British talented, and all the rest of it. Welcome back, Ricky.
Thank you. That's probably the nicest intro I've ever had.
Well, good. You know what, though? I was profoundly moved by Afterlife.
Oh, thank
You're
you.
You're here to talk about it, and yeah. I've watched all of it over the last 2 days, and, you know, you've really hit a nerve with this. It's beautiful. I think it's
one of the best
things you've ever done, if not the best.
Oh, that's lovely. And, I've pushed it a little bit more. I've always done a little bit of drama and pathos, and it was always going that way. But this is the most dramatic and most, I think, heartbreaking. It's funny as well.
It's really, really funny.
It's really funny,
isn't
it?
The dynamics are up and down, aren't they?
They are. They're quite manic because of... that's what the character's about, really. It hits the ground running. We find out my wife has died, played by Kerry Godleyman, and she leaves a little video diary that's really sweet. You see that she's going through chemo. She says, if you're watching this, I'm not around anymore. I couldn't say this to your face, you know. Too embarrassing. Not for me, for you. You could never hear how lovely you were, but you were. But you're absolutely f***ing useless. So put the bins out Tuesdays. And it's really sweet, and he's watching this. You see that he's in a really bad place. He's devastated. He's deeply depressed, suicidal. But he's going to end it all, but the dog is hungry. So he feeds the dog. It gives him long enough to think, right, I'm going to punish the world. Okay, I won't kill myself now, but I'm going to have one last adventure, say and do what I want, and then I've always got suicide to fall back on. He treats it like a superpower. Mm-hmm. It is about grief. And I think the comedy comes from him saying what's on his mind. I think we all want to do that. But we can't.
But you're good at that. I think that's one of your biggest strengths, is you actually say it as it is.
But yes, I do. But in everyday life, I mean, as my public persona, or, you know, at the Golden Globes or on Twitter, that's different to me in a restaurant you know, when I can't even send the suit back anymore, where there's a mouse in it because I think someone had put it on YouTube. So, you know, you do worry about those things. You don't say what's on your mind all the time. Yeah. You'd be a psychopath if you did. And Tony's trying to make himself a psychopath so he doesn't hurt anymore. But it doesn't work because he's basically a decent guy. And all the banality of life that he hates at the moment because he's living in there sort of saves him. Chores save him. Long enough to we can get through. If you know, it's about time heals, I guess.
Massive topics to discuss, though, aren't
they? Huge topics.
Alzheimer's as well, or dementia.
Yeah, it's like I feel like I've got no joy at Tony in his life because you see that I go from watching a home video of my wife to going to a job I don't want, to being annoyed by everyone, to going to visit my dad who's got Alzheimer's, who says, "How's Lisa?" And I go, "She's dead, Dad." Yeah. So it's about that, and then I feel guilty that I was nasty to someone who didn't know what time of day it is. You know, it is all about doing your best, really. Yeah. I think life's amazing until it isn't anymore. I think that, you know, it's about quality of life, and this is an amazing ride, and we'll never have it again. But when the bad days outweigh the good, then I think people should be able to go, "I've had enough."
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it made me think. What's Ricky's view on mortality?
It's forever. I believe there's a nothingness, and I believe that we didn't exist for 13.5 billion years. The chances of us being here are incredible. The fat sperm hitting that egg and me existing is 400 trillion to 1, and then we got 80-90 years of trying everything, just loving, laughing, drinking, eating, exploring, learning, being nice, all those things we have as far as we can go until we don't enjoy it anymore, and then back to nothingness again.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up perfectly in Afterlife. It's really beautiful.
Cheers.
So why have you come dressed in your tracksuit again? Like, you just don't, well, you just don't give a Ricky.
No, I'll tell you why. I don't look good in Armani, right? So I'm going to look, whatever I put on, I'm going to look like a bag of as my mum used to say. So I might as well be comfortable.
Wardrobe wasn't a challenge on this production, was it? What's Ricky wearing today, Afton?
It's the same, whatever, isn't
whatever's
it? I choose things now, things I can keep after.
You're right. Right, more from Ricky Gervais in just a second, but we've chosen a song for you, David Bowie's Starman. Are you happy with that choice?
Oh, my God, amazing.
What a tune.
What a tune, yeah. What a man. What an artist. Didn't
know what time it X. Was. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was David Bowie and Starman, just for Ricky Gervais. You're here to talk about Afterlife. I mean, the grief part of it was really, really touching. I've got a 13-year-old dog at the moment, and I can see the end is near, right? And
it's, I know.
I've got two young kids, and I can't actually begin to think about how I'm going to deal with it. So, Ricky, could you know, you've been through grief, right? What advice would you give me in coping with grief?
I just think that it's... You've given that dog the best life it can. I went through it in Derek. I actually did a scene in Derek where he has to put down a dog, and the vet says, "Think of that. He didn't have a day's pain in his life. That's amazing."
Yeah.
That's amazing. We can't do that, but we can give it to a dog. So that you gave it whatever it's got. You gave it 15 years of no pain. You know, so you could cope with that. What you can't cope with is, was I nice enough? And that's what you go through with grandparents and parents. Was I nice enough?
Did you spend enough time with them, which is a big issue in Afterlife.
Of course it is.
You have your 10 minutes with your dad.
And the answer is probably not, but did they still love you? Definitely. You know, you shouldn't beat yourself up, but you do. You just do. Yeah. Because we're human, and we want to know. That's why you should always be as kind as you can be. Because then you wouldn't feel guilty.
Do you think you have been in your life?
I try, because I remember from an early age feeling guilty. I think I was about 12 or 13, and I was into chemistry, and my brother-in-law had dropped off some of his records. They were moving, right? And there were all these records, right? And they were in the spare bedroom, and my mate came round, and he went, "Oh, I love Elvis and stuff." And I went, "All right," I said, "I'll swap some for your chemistry stuff." And so we go, and I gave him about 4 hours records, and I thought he'd never know. And then I lay awake one night, I thought I was gonna drive myself mental.
Yeah.
And I I knocked on my mum's door. I said, I gave away the Graham's records, right? And she went, okay, if you're good, I won't tell him, right? And I thought that I never want that feeling again. Yeah. I never want to feel guilt again. And when I was about 18, I found out that he'd left them for me.
Yeah.
They were my records.
Oh, wow.
And my mum had used it as an opportunity.
Ah!
Unbelievable.
That's sharp, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
That is sharp.
I want to go, I've been good for no reason.
More from Ricky in just a second. We've also taken the liberty of choosing the Smiths in Panic. Happy with that?
Oh, what a great song.
It's a tune, isn't it?
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it's a great tune. Do you still feel the same about the Smiths, even though Morrissey's slightly tarnished?
But I think that's crazy to look back and associate someone now with the art you loved. It makes no difference to me, you know, within reason. Mm-hmm. You know, I probably, if, you know, Hitler's Hurley songs.
Yeah, well,
no, do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. It's not mad. Fair to judge music that was created and art that was created based on some things that have happened now.
It's crazy. Yeah. And there's so much of that now. John Wayne was in trouble on Twitter. A 48-year-old interview in Playboy already, right? Yeah. Like that. Like, oh, the Playboy have let us down. It's been dead 40 years, but he wasn't woke enough. He didn't. You want to go? What are we going to do about it? Right. Yeah. But it's crazy. It's like I did a tweet the other day about freedom of speech with Churchill. A great tweet about freedom of speech. And someone says, you know, he's a racist. Not in that tweet, he isn't.
Yeah.
You know. It's like, he probably said some terrible things, and he did some good things as well. Let's, you know, it's crazy that you've got to cancel someone, you know, 50 years after their death.
It's a mad notion, isn't it?
It's mad, you know.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Performance and cocktails in full.
On The Evening Show with Gordon Smart and Kelly Jones.
Radio X.
Thank you so much for listening tonight. It's the Evening Show Tuesday night, and it's a very special anniversary. 8th of March 1999, we're looking back at, right, 20 years. Kelly Jones, think back to Performance and Cocktails. What an album it was. Since then, 2.5 million copies sold, 5 times platinum, 100 weeks in the charts. It bought him a house with a moat, 14 houses abroad, fancy cars. It takes me back, right, 98. I was just about to turn 19, Kelly.
Yeah.
It was a magical time in my life. It must have been a really, really special time for you too.
Oh man, it was incredible. You know, we'd been touring around the world for Word Gets Around. And most of this album was written on tour buses and hotels and recorded in between touring that album. So yeah, we were having a very good time, yeah.
We'll get into that in just a sec. Shall we peel back the layers, Kelly?
Go on then.
Right, we're going to rip the wrapper off it tonight and talk about Performance and Cocktails 20 years on with Kelly Jones. And here's how it all started on that album. Roll Up and Shine, Stereophonics on Radio X.
Radio X. Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Here's the opening track for your Stereophonics Roll Up and Shine. Kelly Jones is here. Kelly, I didn't properly welcome you. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm better than the last time I saw you.
Yeah, I've heard you had trouble getting on that night.
You're a trigger in my life, Kelly, for bad behaviour. I'm blaming it for you. The last 20 years. You've been at the root of all that trouble.
Well, I'm glad I've been the fire on your match, let's say.
You know what's weird, Kelly? People have been sending us messages all day about this album, what it means to them. And it's quite a mad spectrum from like wedding songs, engagements, like all sorts of stuff. But here's another one that I didn't expect, right? This guy Tim Ellis had been in touch. Cheers for this, Tim. I once got into trouble with an ex about the Stereophonics album Performance and Cocktails. I'd bought it, but the whole name didn't quite fit on the receipt. So the last word was shortened, right?
I get it, yeah.
So suffice to say, she thought I'd bought an explicit movie. Would you like to apologise to Tim Ellis?
Well,
I
do apologise for that, mate. Yeah, no, that's not going to go down well, is it?
It's definitely not. Well, we'll choose our words wisely, shall we? Okay. Now, Kelly, listen, you always time your visits as well when Wales have just pumped Scotland.
Yeah, sorry about that as well.
You're on course for a big celebration next weekend.
We've got a good weekend coming up if we beat Ireland. Obviously, Jack, my wife, is
Irish, and it's St. Patrick's Day the next day, so it could either be a very, very good weekend or a dire weekend. So.
And it's your little one's birthday.
And this, Riley's three on, her party's on Sunday, so it should be good. And then we're off to make a new album on Monday.
See, Kelly, I've got this vision in my head of all these posh parents turning up for the rock stars' kids' birthday party, yeah. And you're all banjoed.
Well, it'd probably be a bit of that, yeah. Yeah. My old man's coming up, so hopefully we can have a few before I head off again. Yeah, could be good.
So first day recording the next day, right? Let's take it right back to Performance and Cocktails and the first bit of recording, maybe that song as well, the starting tune.
Well, Roll Up and Shine was... started doing the demos for that in a little studio in Oxford, which Radiohead used to use in Supergrass. And I was really into that, the Prodigy kind of Firestarter and all that. I always thought that the Keith Flint vocal on that reminded me of Ian Dury and stuff like that, you know. So I wanted to try to kind of really scream that song. And the intro with all the bass and stuff is Richard drunk falling all over his guitar, really. But we used it as a good intro. But that track, you know, is influenced by bands like Pearl Jam, a lot of the American rock. We wanted the album to sound a lot bigger than Word Gets Around. And that was the obvious first track to come on there, really. Influenced by... a club that Huey from the Fun Loving Criminals told us to go to called Shine in New York. And there was lots of strange people on trapeze naked with pig's heads on and all sorts of weird stuff going on. So it definitely left a mark. And at the end, somebody handed me a business card and it said Shine Performance and Cocktails. And I thought, that's the title.
That's the one. That's the one. How old were you at that point, Kelly?
23.
Right, 23. So seeing a lot of the world and sort of having your eyes open to the world at the time.
Well, I was looking at the timeline of it. Word Gets Around was out August 97. And this was in the shops by March 99, so we were recording this on the whole Word Gets Around, like world tour. And, I think we're only 22 when we signed, so, I guess about 23,
We'll have to give Keith Flint another mention there, because you must have crossed his path quite a lot at the time, festivals and stuff. I mean, what were your recollections of him at that time?
Well, I mean, every festival we played, if we were headlining festivals, you know, we'd always have the 9 till 11, and the Prodigy was always have the one after that, you know, to kind of properly close it. And Keith was a gentleman, really, and we spent lots of times watching them. And we used to always remember their buses just coming in at the last minute and they do their shows, you know. But they were still headlining all these major festivals all the world to now, you know. There's nobody that makes that noise. And Richard did a lot of bike racing and car racing and stuff like that because he's into all that as well. Mm-hmm. But he was a lovely guy every time I met him.
When you played those festivals and they came on after you, you're often probably jumping a bus to go somewhere else. But did you ever stay and watch any performances stand out for you?
I think it was Switzerland or France maybe, but we were watching them. And what was funny was Keith was on the stage and he's doing all the Firestarter moves and he's going mental. Then he'd come over to the side of the stage and he'd just have a chat to you like he just bumped into in the paper shop, you know.
Yeah.
And then he'd go back out there and do his thing. But unbelievable band, unbelievable live band.
We're going to do track two in a second, Bartender and the Thief, which in the Stereophonics canon, it's got to be up there for you, hasn't it? Top three songs.
Yeah, I mean. That track has got an energy, and you know, you have to remember as well the time that came out. There was a lot of pop records on the radio, like S Club 7 and Steps and all stuff like that. So we were on like SMTV and stuff amongst that, and it was like Motorhead, Ace of Spades coming on the telly. You know? So it was a very different sound, and we went down to the River Kwai to shoot the video and all that with the Thai Army, and it was. The Apocalypse Now rip-off. So,
well, that was it. You know, you were 23 years old in Thailand with your bandmates. Come on, Kelly, how well-behaved was that?
That was mental, that was. Yeah. It was like 3 days and it was raining for most. We had to wait for these little pockets of dry to do the shoots.
Yeah.
I just remember sending these little Thai boys off on scooters to buy bottles of vodka and then just them coming back like 3 hours later with these drinks. So it was a good time. Stewart was moaning throughout the whole thing because he couldn't stand it because it was too hot and too wet.
Amazing times, right. Should say, if you want to get in touch tonight, talk about Performance and Cocktails, 83936 and at Radio X, send a question for Kelly and we'll try our best to squeeze them in as much as we can. Here's something that dates this. We're talking about 20th anniversary. It reminds me of the PS1, Sony PS1 and Gran Turismo.
Yes. We were on that, weren't we?
You were on that. That's why I remember it. Yeah.
Well, most of this record, funnily enough, was written while... Stewart was trying to take Wales to the World Cup final on FIFA 97 downstairs and I was upstairs writing just looking to pick apart this new on the bus. So most of it was written on a tour bus. And a lot of... We took Wales to the World Cup final a few times,
Amazing stuff. Right, more from Kelly Jones talking about Performance and Cocktails in just a second. This was also Mark Webster, the darts player's walk-on tune. For anybody's into their darts. Right, here it is, Bartender and the Thief from Performance and Cocktails. Absolutely massive turn-up loud.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
This is The Evening Show, and there's comedy great on the show tonight. Ricky Gervais. He came in to see me just a wee while ago, and I should warn you, if there are any delicate ears listening tonight and they're up beyond their bedtime, you might have to explain what a bleep machine is. But if anybody is listening who has delicate young ears, we're just saying things like sheep and ba and other naughty words like that. This is Ricky Gervais.
I'm Gordon Smart, this is Radio X. Ricky Gervais is with me, and he's tracky, talking about Afterlife, which is absolutely outstanding. It's out right now on Netflix. Watch it. Six parts, half-hour episodes. You can do it in a night.
You can do it in a night. It's like watching one long movie.
Yeah.
It's funny, it's dark, it's sad, it's joyous. The soundtrack's amazing.
Well, Andy Burrows did some stuff on it. Nick Cave's in there.
Yeah.
So the music's beautiful and perfectly chosen as well. Did you do that?
Yeah. And I've never had a budget like it.
Yeah.
Usually in TV, the budget for music is what's left over.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this was, I planned it. I wrote montages to music, big tunes by the Thorns, Elton John, Velvet Underground.
Thorns the Machine in there as well. Satellite of Love's in there.
Mogwai. Hammock. You know, Brilliant. The soundtrack's great, and it just adds to the mood.
I've got to congratulate you as well on another thing, because it gets on my when drama does newspapers badly, and having worked at newspapers for a large part of my career, you cracked it. It's the first time I've heard somebody swear properly in a newspaper office. It's the first time I've seen decent workplace bullying represented as it was when I worked at newspapers.
Yeah, swearing with your accent is great, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I was in Edinburgh once, and I was walking along the road, and there was two coppers coming the other way. And I've got to do the accent, I apologise.
Go for it.
But one of them said, "Ah, Mr. Gervais, you're the funny." And I went, "Thank you very much."
That's such a compliment.
It's such a
when
compliment.
When Ashley Jensen drops the C-bomb in this, it's got gravitas.
Yeah.
And I could tell you were stifling laughs at that point.
Oh, of course, all the time. I mean, I ruin every scene, so it's good when someone else does as well.
Well, Ricky, congratulations. Afterlife covering death, grief, workplace bullying, drugs, everything's in there.
The C word's beautiful.
The C word's used perfectly.
Funny stuff.
What was it Billy Connolly said? There's nobody that can swear quite like a Scot, and his phrase is suffering. what's your go-to swear? The one that gives a real emphasis.
Oh, is one of the best words.
Yes.
you silly jock ex Praetorian TARDIS.
Do you have a quota on when you're making something for Netflix? Like, you're allowed 42 an episode.
The complaint is going to be that I said jock.
It's going to be not a good anymore.
Yeah, is it? See, you're the best. Come on, do it. Give me go.
Suffering Ricky, you fat little Santa. Look at you. Pressed.
It's the best, literally the best interview I've ever done.
I'm so sorry, Mum. Really sorry. If you want to hear all of that, unabridged, uncensored, with all the filth in it, you can do it on Radio X's YouTube page. Go and have a little gander. He talks about all sorts of stuff, including smoking on there. Go and have a gander. Thank you, Ricky Gervais. And go and check out Afterlife. Six parts, half hours on Netflix. You can get that rattled out in one night. Binge watch it. It is absolutely brilliant.
Radio X. Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Stereophonics, Hurry Up and Wait on Radio X. Gordon Smart here with the evening show, and Kelly Jones is with me as well. I should point out to listeners, Kelly, we're not just sitting here in silence listening to that music.
In between.
In between. Yeah. We're talking nonsense.
We're doing press-ups.
Get in touch with us at 83936 at Radio X, and the hashtag Phonics Radio X if you want to keep in touch with the conversation. A couple of messages here for you, Kelly. This song, this album, my absolute favourites of all time. Proper soundtrack to my life. Thank you, Kelly. And that's Adam on the M4, who's not breaking any laws. He says his face is melting to the solo and Bartender. And Martin Peters as well. This is lovely. Superb chat, Kelly. Thank you this evening. We didn't quite make the World Cup, but we gave the Euros a good go in real life. Cannot wait to hear more stories. Used to play Bartender in my old covers band. Tell you what, you've done the covers bands some good over the years, haven't you?
Yeah. Stereosonics, Monophonics, there's a few of them out there.
There are, aren't there? Stereotonics, aren't they? Yeah, I've seen them a couple of times. Yeah. They're not bad.
No, they are good. I think there was one who had an overweight front man, and he was called Belly Jones. I don't know if that's a true story, but that's what somebody told me.
Right, so Hurry Up and Wait there. That was the MASH parody video, wasn't it? So
yeah,
well, once again, you've got the money off the record label, haven't you?
Well, basically, what we did was, everybody was sending us video treatments for the songs, and, like, I did film school and all that, so I was into my films, and And we never liked any of the video treatments because we saw them, the same video treatments go to every other band, and we didn't believe they were, you know, specifically written for the song.
Yeah.
So we were talking to one of the boys in V2, and I was Pinko, and he used to be the video commissioner, but he was a director as well. So we just started writing as many videos as we could with our favourite films that we liked, with three people in it. So it went from Apocalypse Now to
Italian Job,
Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Italian Job. We were the first people ever to allow back in Turin after the Italian Job. First film crew allowed back in there.
That must have been a great crack.
That was great. Driving around in minis all day. I had Sylvester Stallone stunt double in my car.
Yes.
So he was the one who did Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And that one, Hurry Up and Wait, was done on the bay in Sydney, where they were doing Mission Impossible 2. So they were a good laugh. They were cheap, man, because we were just filming them whichever city we were doing a gig in.
Yeah, that must have been a dream for you, though, because of your background with the film stuff.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
A chance to be creative. Yeah,
it was really good. And Pinko was a good director. And normally they get dark by 4 o'clock, so you could get drunk and all night. It was fabulous. Yeah,
I've got a box set from about 10 years ago when we celebrated the 10th anniversary of this, and there's a little note from you in it talking about how you had to provide 6 songs for every single, right?
Yeah.
So as a punter buying music then, I was like, this is brilliant. It's like getting a little EP every time.
Yeah.
There's a pressure on you, isn't it?
Yeah, there was like a CD1 and a CD2. So, you know, you'd have the single, then another version of the single, and then, you know, 5 other songs or whatever.
Yeah.
So we were used to record them in hotel rooms, you know, Neil Young covers, Bob Dylan covers, and all sorts of things. So it was a cool thing for fans, yeah.
Yeah. There's Mr. Writer Acoustic on that single as well, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I remember the sleeve, right, because it was a tube train in London.
Yeah.
Here's a test for you, right? See if the fans know more than you. Which tube train, which line?
Well, I don't know what tube line it was.
Who did that picture? Was that Scarlet Page as well? Because
no,
it looks quite similar at Performance Cockpit.
Well, what we used to do was we used to take lots of Polaroids travelling around and use a lot of them for the single shots and stuff like that. Julian, our mate from back home, we did a lot of the artwork with us, yeah. But Scarlet Page did the album cover, yeah.
I remember seeing you around that time as well. It was always great to see a stereophonic show because you had tunes early on, two albums in.
Yeah.
But you said a great thing to me in an interview about confidence, right? I said, where did you get the confidence from, Kelly? And you said, I know that I could all be over tomorrow. I could walk in any pub in the country and people would pay 20 quid to hear me singing songs, even if it was covers.
Well, the songs, you know, we were brought up playing in pubs and stuff, so we always found the art of the song was the most powerful thing. So when we were writing songs, we understood that, all we ever wanted to do was leave a catalogue behind that stood the test of time, and here we are talking about something 20 years later, and we've always tried to make the albums sound as varied and different styles of music as we can, and I think this album particularly has got, you know, it moves in and out of many different styles of music, which a lot of our contemporaries at the time, you know, you put the first song on and it was the same to the last song, you know, it was, so we were just trying to do something different, really.
It wasn't always Thailand and Australia, though, in massive gigs. Just before that, only a couple of years before, you were in the AA van driving around with Rich, weren't you?
Yeah, we were still driving around the AA van now after that. But the pubs and the clubs, was how it all began, wasn't it?
Right, I'm going to get some of those stories about those worst gigs from about 98, 97 in just a second.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
That was Jade Bird, again, No Joy on Radio X. This is The Evening Show. I'm Gordon Smart, and by the marvels of modern technology, we're joined all the way from the United States of America by the one and only, the gorgeous, pouting, fragrant, super talented Jade Bird. Hello, Jade.
Hello.
Jade, would you mind setting the scene for us? Paint a picture. Where are you in the world?
Baltimore. I think I'm a couple of hours out. I don't actually know where I am.
So you're near Baltimore, did you say?
Yeah, just on the road. I mean, we found the nearest service station that had Wi-Fi so I could FaceTime you.
Ah, well, it's a real pleasure, Jade. Thank you very much for doing that for us. I've got to ask you, how was your Global Awards last Thursday night? It was a bit of a wild night, wasn't it?
I had a bit of hangover, trying to get on the plane. That was interesting. I brought my tequila.
Jade, you got me in a world of trouble. You know, I missed two flights the next day, and it's entirely your fault. You brought your own secret little handbag destroyer. Two flights.
I mean, it was good, though. It was fantastic, though. I really enjoyed myself. I got on my plane early. I think I woke up at, like, 10 to 7 and just stumbled out of bed, like, chopped my jeans on. I was like, oh, God.
I thought you did your remarkable constraint to get yourself home in time and behave sensibly. And it was a great night, though, to see there was Stereophonics there with Blossoms to be nominated for Best Indie. You didn't win this one, but I thought you handled it beautifully because there are plenty more award ceremonies ahead.
Oh, well, thank you very much. As I said, I think Blossoms are an amazing band. I mean, it was great to chat to them, watch their performance. So, yeah, you kind of put that straight face.
Now, Jade, you're in this magical position in your career, right, where you've got an album coming and those songs still belong to you. You haven't shared them with the world. We've obviously heard four amazing songs so far and we've got another one to play in a second.
What's it like sort of sharing that with people when it's been something so personal and so intimate to you? Is it a bit odd handing it over to the world?
I think in a way, yes, but in a way, no. I've played a lot of these songs live. I've tested it out live first. I kind of really just appreciate the audience and how they feel about them. You know, if they're really liking the song, then I'll put it on the album, and if not, you know, I won't. So yeah, I'm just happy to get it out now, 12 songs. You know, you'll hear exactly who I am through this record. There's no debate. So yeah, I'm more happy. Nice. I'm really happy.
So this song we're going to play for the first time is called My Motto, right? Now, I think your motto is probably make sure you bring your own bottle of tequila to every event that you attend. But tell us about the song My Motto. What's it all about?
My motto is probably like, it's very different for me. I've been playing like a lot of heavy guitar music, you know, and releasing it. But the piano, for anyone who's seen me live, know it's a huge part of who I am as a songwriter. So my motto is kind of just being let down a lot. I'm a very open person, as you know, very, very honest. So, you know, when someone doesn't necessarily return that, you're a bit, you know, you got it. And this was a reflection on that. It's a bit more of a sadder tone than I've released just as of yet.
Well, it's absolutely beautiful, Jade. So for the very first time on Radio X, we're going to give it a spin. Right, this is called My Motto, the latest track, something different from Jade Bird as well. This will soothe the soul. It's beautiful. My Motto from Jade Bird.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That's my motto.
That was Jade Bird, My Motto, for the very first time on Radio X. A little bit different from what we've heard before, but gets you right in the heart, that one, Jade. That's the beautiful ballad.
Yeah, it was one take, both vocal and piano. We were in the studio. I kind of just literally brought it that same day and did it together, me and my engineer / producer. And yeah, there was just something, there's just a place you go to when you sing them songs. That's the kind of magic of music and live music and writing it. So I really just hope everyone's liking it as much as the banger, so to speak.
Excellent. No, absolutely amazing. Now, Jade, you're in America at the moment. We've established that. I saw some brilliant footage last night of you at a gig. I think it was Albany, New York State, in front of a packed out auditorium getting a standing ovation. And you're the support act. That's going pretty well then, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, it's two nights in a row people have stood up and I have no idea what's going on. Like, I keep, it's with Hosier, like, who's the nicest guy ever, by the way. Like, live band are great, like, no track, just fantastic music. And yeah, I've been playing half an hour set and people have been standing up and I don't know what's happening. It's like being in a bloody dream or something, I don't know.
Yeah, it's an exciting time because Hosier's number one in America at the moment as well. You're there, it's a great time to be away on tour together.
Yeah, I know Anton Walker in the UK and I'm jumping on with him in April. I'm like the lucky support, I guess.
Now, we had him on the show not that long ago and he said that he has his wings clipped. He's quite sensible now that he's taking control of the gigs. But have you had any of your tequila downfall, as I call it, with him?
Nah, not yet. He's really sweet. I've had a few tequila downfalls in my life, though. I thought that was where it was going to go. I've nearly driven my manager. I was trying to turn him round to end up going to, like, this bar in the middle of, like, upstate New York. I was like, we got to go. He's like, I'm your manager, though. I'm not taking you there.
That does bring me on to my next question, Jade, right? We're talking about an amazing gig, Standing Ovations as the support act. We're not interested in those ones. We want to know about the worst gig, Jade Bird. Paint us a picture for those bands who've had a stinker recently, something that's gone horribly wrong that you just want to curl up and die.
That's a really great question. I mean, I had one. It was up. It was the same grounds as, you know, maybe I don't know. It was the same grounds as Coachella, so it's like the desert. It's literally like the desert. You have this sun and no sun guards, so you're cutting out in and out. Like, it was totally out of time. I was screeching. It was just, there were two people in the crowd. Terrible, terrible gig.
Oh, no. And sunburnt as well, just to make matters worse.
My whole face, you know, forearms, is because you play the guitar. It was, you know, not that great, but it's okay.
You're battle-hardened now, though. You're battle-hardened.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Stereophonics, pick a part of this new. My name is Gordon Smart. This is the Evening Show on a Tuesday night. Kelly Jones is right here taking us through Performance and Cocktails 20 years
old. I am trying to.
What's the elixir of youth, Kelly? You've been drinking something that's kept you young.
It's the Welsh water, I always say.
Well, you're aging well, my friend.
Well, as you are. You know, we've got to try, haven't we?
It's the drink, Kelly.
We've
got
to try.
It's the drink. Try. Now, listen, pick a part. 200,000 copies sold. That was May 1999. What kept it off number one? Can you remember?
No, I can't, actually.
This blows my mind, right? That is an amazing tune, kept off by Shanks and Bigfoot's Sweet Like Chocolate, Baby.
Is that right? Yes. I would have known that at the time.
I bet you would have done.
Wow, 200,000 singles, those days are gone, aren't they?
It was number four, didn't get to number one, right? 200,000 copies, that's mental, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely mental. So that was the Italian Job video, wasn't it?
That was the Italian Job video, and it was written the first time. I think we played the first spot on Reading stage, and Stuart had glandular fever and he couldn't come to America with us. So me and Stuart, me and Richard went to New York for the first time, and we stayed in the Gramercy Park Hotel. Yeah. And I wrote the song in there. It was kind of like walking into Kojak or something, you know, all those shows you watched as a kid, Cagney, yeah. So you'd see you were looking at all these phones and barmen, and I just felt like I was inside a television set. So
yeah.
That was the first song I wrote over there, yeah.
There's another question I've always wanted to ask you and never have is, when you've got that song, right,
yeah.
Who's the first person that you turn to and play it to? Is there somebody in your life all the way through that gets the first test?
In them days, it would just be literally Stuart and Richard, really. Yeah. I'd write the song, recorder on a little cassette, dictaphone at that point, and then they'd probably overhear me playing a lot of it on the tour bus around then, but these days I'd probably just send it to them on an email or something. But for a while, you know, like we were saying, it's something very personal and it's yours and you're enjoying it, and then you're not quite sure it's going to turn into a record, you're not sure if anybody else is going to like it, and then people start judging it, and then it kind of either falls apart or it grows and grows and grows, you know. Yeah. So it's
a magical phase,
really.
Period, isn't it? A magical period. Yeah. But just belongs to you. On all the songs on this album, is there one that you thought that's the one, and did it surprise you that another one you didn't think would be quite so big was a success?
I think Stop to Fill My Car Up, being the last song, was a song like I wrote on a piano, and I can't play the piano, but I could write a few songs in it. And Marshall, who's one half of Bird and Bush, who produced the record with us, he taught me how to play Imagine by John Lennon on the piano, and then I turned it back to front and wrote Stop to Fill My Car Up. I had a little piano off a woman in an hairdresser as I swapped for a T-shirt, and it was like a Roald Dahl Twilight Zone episode in my head, and the song came out very fast. And it became like a massive fan favourite. We used to close the show with it, you know. He was like a bit of a Massive Attack kind of drum loop sort of sounds and stuff like that. But it didn't sound like anything else on the record. But I do remember playing that to Stuart for the first time. I was in Real World Studios and we were down there. And when you're in Real World, there's lots of other bands in other studios around you. So like Robert Plant might be in one, Johnny Marr might be in the other one, and Ethan Johns might be in another one. And you all meet at dinner, you know. So you're having dinner with all these massive stars and, you know, you're quiet in the corner. And I said, I've written a song on the piano, and he said, well, come and play it to me. And they made me go upstairs to like Peter Gabriel's like grand piano upstairs and play this song. and I just went, stop the film, my car up. And Stuart just started laughing. He goes, go on, play it then, go on. I said, no, that's it, that's just how it starts. Yeah. And then he goes, all right, no, go on, start again. I'm sorry, but sorry, because he was tanked up. And then and then it became one of his favourites, because he loves lyrics, Stuart, you know. So. Yeah.
That's the thing in performance in Cocktails. Well, I heard a story, right, that you had forgotten about two tracks.
Yeah.
Was this one of them that was on the dictaphone, the missing dictaphone?
Bartender was one of them.
That was it,
yeah. Well, I record a lot, but I never listened back to a lot of it. So Bartender and Pick Apart, yeah. Mm-hmm. They were on the B-side of this cassette I was working on, so I'm glad I found them, really, yeah. They were the two first singles, I think.
You talk about having those greats in the studios around you, right? I remember Bono saying to me in an interview once that you're one of the greatest rock and roll voices of your generation. And Bob Dylan as well, of the bands he's loved in recent years, Stereophonics are in there, right? Where do you see yourself? Where do you think Stereophonics belong in that group of amazing talent?
Well, you know, for us as a band, or for me personally as a songwriter, I've only ever wanted to be like a band like Tom Petty or, you know, or you know, the Eagles or AC/DC or, you know, bands that have this massive catalogue, or the Stones. You know, it was never about the kind of flamboyancy to any of it. I just wanted to make a catalogue of music, or the Kinks, you know, something that in 20, 30, 40 years time people are going to want to listen to again. And so I just wanted to kind of be that guy, you know, still able to go to the pub for a pint but play football stadiums, really.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Always makes me. It's one of the games we play when we've got a drink in us. Is what the Stereophonics would have sounded like if it had been Ali Jones and not Kelly Jones in the band. You know? Could you imagine the band with a different singer?
Yeah, he's a good lad, Ali.
He's a good boy. Isn't he? He's a good boy.
Could I imagine the band with a different singer? I don't know. I mean, a lot of what the songs are is the way that I sing. I mean, me and Adam were talking about this the other night, and you know, that's the kind of the prize of it, and it's also the burden of it sometimes. Do you know what I mean? It's a lot to live up to sometimes, to carry on doing all this stuff 20 years later, but you know, it keeps me on my toes, you know.
Clips your wings with the party, and anyway,
it does, yeah.
Loads of messages coming in for you, Kelly. Thanks for sending these. Remember, 83936 and at Radio X. It's a lovely message. Word gets around when I fell in love with Stereophonics. Performance and Cocktails was when my band released the new album for the first time. Late teens on the loose with a driving licence with friends trying to play along. Both albums in my top five, and that's from Owen, obviously in Wales. It's great.
Thank you very much. It's the same with us. We were driving around in cars listening to the Bends, or, you know, everybody had their albums, you know.
Yeah. Another message here. I've been evicted to the kitchen because there's football on. Definitely not complaining, though. This is one of my all-time favourite albums. That's from Louise.
Thank you very much. Watching the Leeds match?
Yeah, I should hope so. Yeah, I should hope so. 2-0, by the way, Kelly, isn't it?
Yeah, that's doing very well.
We're going to do Just Looking in about 6 seconds time, so there's no chance for me to ask you anything else, Kelly.
No, we've got to get there quick, because the vocal starts now.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Jade Bird is still with me right now. She's on tour in America supporting Hozier. She's playing to sellout crowds, standing ovations, all the rest of it. But Jade, we don't want to talk about all this success. We don't just want to embarrass you with worse gigs. I was wondering if you could share a story with me, right? I'm writing a book called Slash Gordon, right? Which is about awkward encounters in the bathroom with famous people. Have you got a story where you found yourself having a conversation with maybe a famous musician or somebody well known in a bathroom?
Not in a bathroom, that's such a guy thing. Like, you don't have a wee in the girls' bathroom and be like, oh, hello, you know.
That's where all the conversation happens, isn't it? Post wee with the girls.
No, you guys are going totally wrong. But I have had, like, I remember we did a festival upstate and Father Joe Misty was playing, and I was obsessed, and there was a certain something, I should be telling you all this, there was a certain something that we, you know, had to eat. As we were coming back into, you know, the artist's bit, and Father John Missy sat on the front, I start to feel a little bit peculiar.
No.
Yeah. So I'm coming up the stairs, and I go up the stairs, and I'm a huge fan, and so I go up to him with probably more excitement than I do in my whole life, just going like, oh, I love your set, it was just so good. And I just absolutely died.
Oh,
God.
Well, Jade, listen, it was such a great night having a crack with you last Thursday night, and I can't wait to see you when you're back. Look after yourself, take care, and we'll see you for the new album. Well done on the new song.
Oh, thank you so much for the support. I really, really appreciate it. It's good to chat.
Well, there she is, the world-class Jade Bird in a slightly dodgy service station, but that's why we love her. Cheers, Jade.
See you soon, Gordon. Take care.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Half the lies you tell ain't true. With the correct grammar and punctuation, Kelly, you're a clever man.
Well, my brother Kevin always used to say that to me. Half the lies you tell ain't true. And I wouldn't believe your radio, so I pinched a few song titles off Kev.
And you wrote Mr. Writer about a
journalist.
And
I Hurry Up and Wait, I think.
Every time I hear those songs, I get paranoid thinking, are they about me?
No, that wasn't about you.
Okay, that's a relief. No. Kelly, some lovely messages for you. Kelly Jones, greatest voice ever, and Performance and Cocktails, the greatest album ever. Thanks for creating such a timeless masterpiece from Helen.
Well, it's very kind of her.
Two kisses from her as well.
Thank you very much.
Outrageous. Oh, two back there. Yeah. Chris Elkins, first gig with Stereophonics 98. Can believe I'm now listening 20 years of Performance and Cocktails classic. Does the 20 years thing throw you a little bit?
Well, we've never really done much anniversary stuff. We always kind of keep on going forward, but it's... You know, a lot has happened in that 20 years. It doesn't feel like a long time, but when you add up all the stuff that's gone on in that time, there's a lot, isn't it?
So, awful lot, yeah, yeah, awful lot. Sitting in the car, on the drive, just listening to Kelly. Could do with a bit longer with them, actually. Forever my favourite band. I was front row at Rise Festival last year. Best night of my life. Cried my eyes out the whole time. From Henna and Essex. Just tears, no kisses.
Just tears. Well, you know, as long as you make them laugh, make them cry, make them wait, Gordon, you're doing something right.
A question from Gaz. It's a short question, and we're putting you under pressure here. Question for Kelly. Glastonbury, is it happening?
Well, they never asked us back after the first time. Well, we didn't know, we did it three
what
times.
What did you
sorry.
Do to deserve
that? Sorry, I'll rephrase that. We started off at 10:30 in the Sunday morning. Yeah. And then we got to midday on a Saturday, just before Robbie did the Big Angels thing. And then we headlined the Pyramid on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And that's it, really. We've never had the request back. I don't think many people ever have done it twice, have they, apart from Coldplay and Muse.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that.
Not many people have been doing it twice, so
maybe the
I mean
cure.
we'd like to do it, because I can't quite remember the first time. It was massive.
Have you noticed that a lot of it was missed the first time round?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, a lot of it you know, it's going so fast. You know, Wembley, you're doing Wembley Stage, you've been doing headlining. The year we headlined Glastonbury, we headlined Slane Castle, the V Festival, and Glastonbury within about 2 months of each other.
Yeah.
And our agent said, you know, you don't want to do all three because, you know, you want to space it out a bit. I said, well, they might not ask us back. And I was right.
I remember reading a great interview with John Entwistle from The Who, and he could remember his career based on his shoes.
Yeah.
Right? Well, so he had about 20 million pairs, right enough. But it's funny, like, I was asked earlier on, can you ask Kelly about his leather jackets? First question, does he keep them? And second of all, you know.
Well, it's true, because when we have to look through all the archive photographs to actually, like, something went online this week to mark Performance and Cocktails era, you wouldn't recognise it by the clothes you're wearing, really.
Yeah.
Because at this time, we were just buying clothes in second-hand shops, second-hand leather jackets and hoods. We looked like a bunch of undercover cops going round, to be honest, too.
Drug squad, CID.
Yeah, we did, yeah. We looked narcotics, yeah.
Excellent stuff. Haircuts as well, that's the other timer, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we tried to have... I had most of my bad haircuts before we got assigned. I had a lot of big Pearl Jam long hair before that, but yeah.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
It's Simon Amstel, and he's here to talk about his new movie, Benjamin.
Thanks very much, Gordon Smart. How are you?
It's great to see you. First of all, it's been a long time, isn't it, since we've crossed swords? Is that right?
I can't remember ever crossing swords. I feel like I saw you once in a room. Did we talk about
things? Oh, yeah, I've bumped into you at many a gig.
Oh. And what happened?
I think 3 o'clock in the morning is normally an unusual conversation.
That wouldn't have been me. I would have been in bed. Ridiculous.
A few gigs over the years. Well done, Simon. I watched the movie last night.
Thank you.
It weird hearing it being called a movie?
I mean, it is a movie. So maybe it would be weird if you said it was an advert. That would be
that
very
would be
strange.
Very odd, wouldn't it? That would be very odd.
But, yeah, it's exciting. It's very exciting.
Where did it start off for you? Because I believe it's got an Edinburgh connection. So it started to pour out of your head on a train journey from Edinburgh.
That's right. I was on the train home from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and I just started... I guess I had an impulse to write something long that was maybe about my 20s. I wanted to figure out what was wrong with me in my 20s. Why couldn't I... you know, maintain some kind of loving relationship. It turned out it was because I was a lunatic who was terrified of intimacy. That was the real problem. And so it became this story about this guy who was seemingly incapable of loving and being loved. But then he meets this guy called Noah, who slowly breaks him down, and so he can finally be in a moment with another human being without feeling like he has to be someone better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think the biggest compliment I could pay you about this film is that had I not been told you were involved in making it, I think I'd have thought this could be about Simon Amstel, this film.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, it's very personal, I suppose. Yeah. It's really... I mean, I wrote it as a way of figuring stuff out, and that means that kind of means revealing everything, because otherwise you don't figure out what's wrong with you. I wouldn't say that everything that happens in the film are things that have happened to me, but all the feelings are true.
Yeah.
So I feel all the pain that Benjamin feels, and he, you know, he has this anxiety and he's lonely and he's depressed, and I felt all of those things. And and there are some scenes where I just... There's a scene where Benjamin goes to see a piece of contemporary dance and feels very disconnected because it's so pretentious, but nobody... When the piece of dance finishes, nobody laughs. They applaud like it's art. And yeah. I saw that bit of contemporary dance. And
did
I
you
felt,
really?
Yes, and I felt that isolated.
Yeah.
And because it didn't make any... I felt like I was insane. So it was really lovely, actually, to put it in the film and recontextualise it.
What kind of director are you?
Sorry, a really good one. Very instinctive. Yeah. And I suppose I really like working with actors, so maybe one of those actors' directors. I just like waiting for something real to happen when I'm at the monitor. I think that's... I think maybe that's just what everyone is, but that isn't the case. That doesn't seem to be the case when you look at films that come out.
Producer Vin is a big fan of Simon Amstel.
Producer Vin, right? Hello.
Big fan of Simon Amstel. He came back from one of your stand-up shows about a year ago and said the Claxons supported, or James Wrighton supported him tonight, and he played some new music. Was that new music the stuff we hear in the film?
I don't think it was, actually. I think that might be from his forthcoming album,
right?
But we wrote all that music for the film together because why did we do that?
This sounded like brilliant fun to me. So you'd hide in a little bunker and write music together.
Yeah, he has a studio in his basement, and yeah. I wrote all the lyrics, he wrote the melodies, and he's just really fun to be around. And it didn't feel like you know, he hadn't really written a film score before, and I hadn't really written many lyrics before. I wrote the lyrics for a pretend musical that was part of the pretend documentary Carnage I did, but This was a first for both of us, and we just had a great time.
You're taking the film apart, that's a brilliant thing just to do alone, writing with James Wrighton, isn't it? Without having a film to put the music to.
Yes, I worry we'd feel. How would we feel if there wasn't a film? We'd feel like we had lost our minds if there wasn't an actual project.
Reason to do it. Should we celebrate with some klaxons right now?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do it. We're going to have golden scans.
Mm.
I'm going to say this was chosen by Simon Amstel. It wasn't really. It could have been.
But it wasn't.
Right, klaxons on Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
That was Golden Scans, Klaxons. I'm sitting with the former director of Klaxons video, Simon Amstel.
No, I did a Shock Machine video, his solo project.
Oh, was it? Right, sorry. Yeah. Yes. Now, the stand-up part of this film is excellent as well. So Joel Fry, who plays Benjamin's best friend in this film, there's a scene where he has what I describe as a stinker of a stand-up gig. And when we have comedians in, we always ask about worst gigs and also best and worst heckles. So Simon, would you share with us? And by the way, was that taken from an experience you witnessed, that stand-up scene?
The feelings, but not. I've never had a glass thrown at me.
No, that's good.
Yet. I think one of the worst gigs I did was, I think it was a strange kind of combination of charity and corporate event.
Lovely bedfellows.
Yeah, I turned up, I think it was in Wales, and it was an award show to celebrate companies that had done stuff for people with disabilities. Right. So car companies that had done something, you know. And I thought, oh, this is good. This is like when I'm 23 or something. I thought, oh, this is good. I've got a bit of material about Mattel, who brought out a wheelchair Barbie character. And the joke was something about how they didn't call it the wheelchair Barbie, which was really cool. They transcended the label and made her the school photographer. It was called Becky, the school photographer. And I thought, what an amazing thing that she's not just... I can't remember what the joke was, but it's not... The fact that she's in a wheelchair isn't... That's not her personality. Her story is she takes really good low-angle photographs. So I did this material at this event because I thought it's so relevant. And they weren't laughing. I thought, what's going on? I started to get a bit tense. And I just dropped that material. I thought, okay, well, that's not working. I'll start just talking about some, stuff about my sex life and relationships. And also nothing. And I felt this real strong... It was like they were thinking, why is he saying any of this stuff? And I realised that I hadn't been introduced as a stand-up comedian. And the people in there were quite old and maybe didn't know who I was at all. And I thought, they think I'm here to give a speech about disability. And I've started with this very odd story about Becky. And now I'm talking about sex. What's wrong with this man?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
And then I get a note from the back of the... This is even worse than having a glass thrown at you. I get a note from the back of the room, and I open it. I read it to myself on stage, and it says, "We think it might be too late for stand-up comedy. Can you introduce the band?" So I thought, okay, well, I'll just read this note out loud, and that'll be self-deprecating and funny, and then I'll get off to laughter and applause. I read the note, silence. I just walk off to silence, and then sit in a hotel room for about 3 hours trying to figure out what happened.
That's a written heckle.
Yeah, we think it's too late for this.
I think that's the best worst gig we've ever heard. Thank
there you
Sam.
Go. Good, I win.
I appreciate you sharing your awkwardness even more with us.
It's healing in the end, you know, it's healing.
It is. Right, you're a massive music fan. It's played a huge part in your life in the last 20 years. Are you a Vaccines fan?
You mean the band?
Yes.
Sure.
Are you pro or against the vaccine?
Yeah, I'm pro okay. Vaccines.
That's a relief. That's a relief. All right, if you wanted the vaccines, it's Smart on Sunday.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I Wouldn't Believe Your Radio, a cheeky song written by Kelly Jones from Stereophonics.
I dreamt that one.
Did you?
I was when I was still living in my mother's house when we were touring Word Gets Around. Yeah. I just bought a 1968 Gibson SG in a shop in Cardiff, Cranes. And I think I saw George Harrison play that day in a video for some reason. I went to bed and I had Ringo Starr and James Dean Bradfield whistling that song on my mother's doorstep, and I got up in the middle of the night and recorded it in my pants.
No way.
It worked out.
That's amazing, that, isn't
it?
I love those stories.
I haven't dreamt many, but I did dream that one.
Somebody told me that when you write the lyrics to a song, it comes out in one go.
Like, you don't go back to it there.
A lot of them, yeah. I mean, the good ones, the ones that people have remembered, they've often come out in one bash, yeah.
Yeah, we've got a lovely message here as well, another one. The album, I would go round and round the block 10 times singing with my 3-year-old. We did it again this weekend.
Yeah.
He's 23 years old. Wow. That's from Ange. She's been to 100-plus gigs, and there's kisses and all sorts of emojis in there.
Well, thank you very much for the support. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
23-year-old, yeah. Amazing. I wonder if those songs are programmed in that young man's head as well, eh?
Well, you look out in the gigs now, and it's like 15-year-olds in the front row, and it goes back to people who's been following us since back in the day. So it has turned into, like, you know, 2-3 generations of people. It's brilliant.
That blew my mind at Cardiff Uni when we were down there last year. Like 4 generations, a granny on someone's shoulders.
I know, it's mental.
Quality, quality stuff. Right, I'm going to take you back to 1999, Mr. Jones. Hey, boy, hey, girl. Good time for music, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's when Graham Coxon was having a bit of a bother with the drink as well.
Yeah.
Foos. And we've got to get some hip-hop in there as well, but Snoop.
Supergrass.
It's of the time, isn't it?
Chili's.
Pub quiz. I suppose Eminem just happened, didn't he, really? 99, 2000. Ian Brown solo, it was Golden Greats, wasn't it? It's a great time, 1999, for music, wasn't it?
We did the Chili Peppers Californication tour with them. That was pretty cool. And Chad, the drummer, he used to stand on the side of the stage watching us every night, and his drum kit was set up behind Stuart's drum kit with a sheet over it, you know, like when you open up for somebody. And we were doing Transverse one night, and I thought there's a funny echo in the room, I can hear two drums, and I turned around and Chad had ripped the sheet off and he was playing drums behind Stuart. So, and then we went back in the dressing room and we were excited and we were playing like I Wear to L by AC/DC, and it was really loud, and Flea and Anthony was, I think, meditating in another room, so we had a big, you know, knock on the door from the tour manager, who was a female, to keep the noise down. But it was Chad actually in our dressing room. And Chad, this is no word of a lie, man, Chad took the door and he broke the door over his knee. And I said, I'm getting out here. And I went to catering and I came back and there was a little bloke on the floor with a dustpan and brush and another bloke with a calculator.
It's absolutely outstanding. You know, it's funny, you were the soundtrack to our lives, 1989, but what were you listening to? What was the stuff that was inspiring you?
1999, I was listening to Supergrass. I loved that Blur track, Tender. Yeah. Misadventures of Lauryn Hill was out as well around that, wasn't it?
Yeah, would have been,
That was a great record. I remember seeing her in New York, she was amazing. Yeah, a lot of the same stuff, Radiohead, you know.
A very quick question then. Of all the bands around at that time, and you could be in one, I'm the genie with your magic wish, which band would you have been in?
Were the Strokes out by then?
I think that was 2001, so you've got to choose again.
Probably Supergrass then.
Supergrass, fair shout. Right, more from Kelly Jones in a second. This is the song for everybody in Wales, Scotland and Ireland.
Yeah.
Some of the English folk.
We took the title for this from Trainspot in the play.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
I'm Gordon Smart and this is your Evening Show on Radio X, and every Monday we have a little classic album chat. Tonight is a really, really special one. Always is, actually, but tonight's a really one close to home for me. The Strokes, Room on Fire. This was their second album, of course. It was released in October 2003. 16 years ago. Oh man. And I remember it really, really well because I had my first big job in London and moved down. I felt the pressure. The first album reminded me of freedom in university and getting drunk and having a carry on. This one was about an escape from hard work. What an album it is. Absolutely brilliant stuff. Hit number 4 in America, number 2 in Britain. Same band, producer from Is This It, but with a smoother, less lo-fi sound. Now here's a little story for you that I never knew until today. They initially tried to record with Radiohead producer Nigel Godrich, but the sessions didn't work out. They called the tunes soulless. So they finished the recording in 3 weeks with the same scratchy sound, and guitarist Nick Valencia said that it would have been even better if they had had more time. I disagree with him on that. I think the reason it worked is because it felt so spontaneous. There's some criticism at the time that the album was too similar to the first, but it's been re-evaluated since. Rolling Stone said the Strokes have resisted the temptation to hit the brakes and screw around with a sound that doesn't need fixing. In other words, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The sleeve notes feature all the usual roles, engineers, producers, writers, mastering. But how about this for a little tricks of beauty? JP Bowersock is thanked and credited as being the band's sensei. Love that. Brilliant trick. The third single was The End Has No End. The B-side was a cover of The Clash's Clampdown. Recorded where? London's Ali Pally. Let me know your recollections, your thoughts, your love for this album. It's a beauty. Room on Fire from The Strokes, October 2003. It's 16 years old. Get in touch, 83936 and at Radio X. So I've got 12:51 come up in a second, but first, the absolute classic, Reptilia.
The Evening Show, classic album of the week. X.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart. The Evening Show, classic album of the week.
X.
That was just a treat, wasn't it? The Strokes, Room on Fire, October 2003. 16 years ago that was released. And I finished off at 12:51. How about the hand claps in it? Did you hear them? Really subtle. They did that in 3 weeks, right? So there's only one hand clap. If that had been done over 6 months, it would have been overlaid countless times. It sounded completely different. It's brilliant. It was the first single, of course, 12:51. The video, inspired by Tron, which is one of my favourite 80s films, directed by Roman Coppola, Francis Ford Coppola's son. How about that? New York Mafia there, eh? Reptilia, that was the first track we played. And the tune came from The Room Is On Fire as she's fixing her hair. The B-side, if you remember, was a duet with Regina Spektor. I love this, right? Julian Casablancas wanted the credits to be changed to Regina Spektor and The Strokes, and because he put his foot down, the change delayed the release of the single. Good man. How about that in the background as well? I Can't Win. It's a fan favourite. If only there was more time. Thanks for your messages. Rob Bailey says, it's just more of what made their debut great. Cannot complain about that. Couldn't agree more, Rob. Loved that tonight. What a classic album. The Strokes, Room on Fire from 2003.
Radio X. Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Simon Amstel is here. He's now a fully fledged film director, as well as a stand-up comedian. He's a busy boy.
I'm very busy.
Very busy. Got a lot going on. Have you got something else up your sleeve at the moment, by the way?
What
I know we should be talking
want?
About this right now. Is
what
this not enough
for me? No, I don't think so.
I think I've been asked to find out if you've got any more stand-up lined up.
Oh!
Yes. Come on, Amstel, you've done this before.
I think I'm about to, well, not I think, it's definitely true, that I'm about to go to Australia to do a couple of weeks there. Then I'm flying to America to do some things there, and then I'm coming back to London to do something I think I can't announce yet. Or maybe I can if it's coming.
I've got it written down here.
Oh, what does it say?
Ah, I tried to play you there. I don't have it written down here.
There might be a one-off show in London happening.
Oh, fantastic. Has it got anything to do with Bill Bailey and Phil Jupitus?
No.
All right, okay.
I'm sorry.
That's a shame. We had Bill Bailey on recently, and he talked very fondly about his times together with you.
Oh, that's good. Oh,
he's
I
a
like
lovely
him.
Man.
Yeah.
So Benjamin's out now.
Mm.
Where can we see it, and how do we engage
in all
with
good, film? Cool cinemas. It's in lots of Everyman's and Curzon's in London and across the country, and various other cool cinemas that I've been I've been doing a few Q&As in different places. Is it at the Watershed in Bristol? Those sorts of places, you know,
the Cameo in Edinburgh, places like that.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're, you know, if you like the cool cinema near you, it'll be there.
It'll be there. So Benjamin is out now, and you can get the soundtrack as well, the James Wrighton soundtrack.
Yes, it's all out there. Whatever you want.
You can get it all.
If you want to see a film, go to a cinema and see it. If you want the soundtrack to that film, you can get that via the internet.
Simon Amstel, best of luck with the film. And it's
Thank
lovely
you.
To see you.
You too, after all these years.
I know, we're awkwardly moving around each other.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chief.
Thanks.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
There's a song for all the pasty Welsh and Scots listening. T-shirt, suntan, stereophonics. Kelly, you just told us that was based on Trainspotting.
I went to see the play of Trainspotting. I think it was in Swansea Uni or somewhere like that. And I just remember one of the lines of the dialogue was a kid was talking about a T-shirt suntan, and it just reminded me when I was a kid on holidays, you know, you having that burnt red skin T-shirt suntan. And it was a great line. Yeah.
This described 40 years of both our lives, haven't
it? Described 20 years of tea in the park.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
So it's just after 9 o'clock and we are celebrating that great album, Kelly. Some lovely messages. Mark Oldman says, one of the go-to albums when you don't know what to listen to. Choice Paralysis. Superb album. First saw them in 99 as well.
Fantastic. I like that. My goal was to go to Tom Petty, but there you go.
Kelly, where is the weirdest place in the world that you've heard one of your songs?
Aberdare Dentist, 1999. And I had to go in there for a fill-in or something. And I, just as he was sticking that needle in and injecting me with whatever they inject you with to send you off, that bend in the guitar just looking came on. So that was when he goes, "You won't feel a thing," he said.
I could ask so many things. My brother's a dentist and he says the worst thing that can come on is Cisco, the thong song. When you've got a pensioner underneath it.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
I'm Gordon Smart, this is Smart on Sunday, and we have a returning guest, his third appearance on Smart on Sunday, Alex Horn of the Horn Section, who are on tour at the moment, and Taskmaster as well, which is returning for his eighth series.
That's right, Gordon. Hello, Gordon.
Good to see you.
It's nice to return for a third time.
I'm glad you keep coming back.
Third and last time.
It's a sign of success, isn't it? The Taskmaster bandwagon rolls on.
Yeah, it's true. We do get to that time of the year when the new series is coming out and I go and chat to people like you. And I really enjoy it, to be honest, because, well, you're nice.
That's a good start. Yeah. A good start.
And I like talking about it because it's a fresh bunch of comedians on it each time, which is, I guess, one of the interesting things about the show. There's a different cast each series.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy to do this.
Yeah. I've got to ask you about this because it's how challenging is it, eight series in, to keep it fresh and come up with the madness?
Well, I feel like I should say it's very challenging, but I honestly don't think it's that hard for me, and partly because we do two series a year.
Yeah.
But that's all we do, really. And it's 20 episodes and maybe 40 tasks per series.
Yeah.
So I've got a year to come up with 80 tasks.
That's not bad. It's not bad. Do you find that people are now offering good ideas that you have to kind of take on board?
It's slightly fiddly that, because we don't really want it to be a crowdsourced show. But I do like the fact, you know, the fact that we've got any fans at all is amazing to me. And lots of people do their own Taskmaster events and it's brilliant. And if you look on Twitter, some of the people, there's a Taskmaster book, and some of the people take it really seriously and come up with the most imaginative, inventive stuff.
Yeah.
And I've come up with great tasks, but I'm yet to really use them because it feels then like I'm losing control of it. And also, I don't know legally what happens if somebody else has come up with the stuff.
For it.
Yeah.
And that's not including John Robbins' ideas that he'll suggest
I have used a John Robbins idea before. He came up with the idea of who can make the best Marmite. Or it was just make Marmite, best Marmite wins. And we did that in series.
Excellent. Did he send an invoice for that? Because he's a very particular man.
He is a very particular man. No, he didn't. He didn't. But there was a tacit understanding that one day he will appear on Taskmaster, which I want as well. But, you know, John, got to be patient. James Acaster had to wait seven series.
He had to wait, yeah. Well, last time we had you in, we had a great conversation about your dream guest, and we got to James Blunt. I think Gordon Strachan was mentioned as well in passing.
Probably.
Matt Letizia, which I think might have been a panic name that you mentioned.
Well, normally I say Jack D, because he's my ideal guest. Sir Lenny Henry, still.
Yes.
We've asked him, but he was busy acting, but I think we'll keep asking him. Yeah. And then, Strachan and Letizia. I mean, I'd like people like Annika Rice, you know, people who wear jumpsuits naturally.
Yeah.
I think Murray would be good, Andy Murray.
Yeah, he would be brilliant, wouldn't he, Andy? Yeah.
Brian Cox. I'd quite like to see Brains on it.
Yeah.
Struggling, because we've got Paul Sinner in this next one, who's got a great brain, but is useless at many of the tasks. And I think it'd be nice to see the likes of Brian Cox really struggle, you know, trying to blow up a balloon.
Well, I think a couple of series down the line, you could have a sports special or something.
We have talked about that. We thought maybe we'll do a special where you have three sportsmen against two scientists or something like
that. Oh, that's good, isn't it? That's good. We should talk through the lineup, because it's absolutely brilliant this time. So Joe Thomas, In Betweeners fame.
Yes.
He's a former maths tutor, I seem to remember, so he's got some sort of cerebrum about him.
He's very clever. He was on Celebrity Mastermind recently and won by miles. He's got quite a brain on him, which again means he will probably not do very well on the show. He's good. And he has a relationship with Greg, obviously, because Mr. Gilbert was his teacher.
Yes.
And he's still a little boy, really, Joe.
Yeah.
I don't know how
he is, isn't he? He hasn't grown up. He's a Peter Pan of a man, isn't he?
Yeah. He's got very floppy hair and he never opens his eyes.
And Ian Stirling, the most successful bearded Scotsman for a long, long time.
Mustachioed for some of this series.
Really?
Yeah, big mustache.
And we also got Lou Sanders.
Lou Sanders is nutty. I think nutty's not a great word to use, but for her it's the only word you can use. She's nutty.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's competitive. She's just an extraordinary woman. Yeah, and what is good about the show, I hope, is that you're going to see her 10 times. If you see her in one episode, you'll just think, well, that was a mad lady. By the end you'll realise yes, that is the case, but she's also she's doing her best. There's not an act. She is just different to most people.
And then you've got Paul, of course, from The Chase, who's got a big brain, so again probably going to be terrible.
Yeah, big brain, a lot of sporting knowledge but not a lot of prowess.
And Shan Gibson as well, which it's a great lineup.
So Shan's from Carshare, that's probably where you know her best, and from Wales. So we've got Wales and Scotland this time, so we're gradually representing more people.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Alex Horn is here. He is the star of Taskmaster.
One of the stars.
One of the stars. That's
not one of the stars.
The powerhouse, the engine system, room.
The admin.
The admin, yeah, the little Alex Horn. Alex, last time you came in, we never got a chance to ask you about your worst gig. As I said, I've seen you in Edinburgh a number of times back in the day. Could you just share with us, maybe to offer some inspiration to a comedian, up-and-coming comic who's struggling, about your worst gig?
My worst gig was in Bangor, Northern Ireland, and I used to do this lecture about laughter with Tim Key, and it was a cod lecture. It was meant to be funny. And we were booked into this thing, and we turned up, and it was just us, and the big sign outside the door, it's quite a small, typical Northern Ireland town, and the sign said, Adult Comedy Night. Which was a bad sign. And to warm us up, there was no compo. They just played a Billy Connolly video and pressed pause. And then we came on. And they were loving Connolly. And they were not loving us. So we did 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes. And then it was all very civilised. There was just no reaction at all. And then we said, would you like us to put Billy Connolly back on? And they said yes. So we did. And then we went and hid in a tiny B&B. And we didn't even dare go out to get food. We didn't want to show our faces. And we felt so small and pathetic.
How do you pick yourself up from an experience?
It took a while. It really does dent you.
That's horrible.
Yeah, you just have to do another good gig.
Yeah.
You have to wait till there's a good one and then you're okay again. But until you get back on stage and it goes, well, you were in an awful state.
I suppose at least you've got Tim for company. It's not a... Well, yeah. Well, this could be a solid... If it was just you, it could have been even worse.
But if it was just me, I could pretend it never happened. I would sort of assign it to a memory that didn't exist.
There is a witness. On the same theme, I don't think we ever got your best or worst heckle. And you can play with that as much as you like.
I would say many people you ask that to will say Up the Creek in Greenwich. There's this gig which used to be run by Malcolm Hardy, who was wonderful. And it was quite early on, and I'd done maybe 2 minutes and it had gone as expected, not brilliantly. And they started shouting, please stop. I think they said please, which was nice. I said, just give me a minute. And literally as one, they all said, okay, one, two, three. And they got to 60, and then I went.
I don't know. You followed it through.
Yeah, and they quite respected people engaging with the heckles. They were always creative heckles, but they were funnier than you. That's always the problem.
That's never a good situation.
No. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Beautiful stuff. Stereophonics is yesterday, tomorrow, today. Kelly Jones is here talking about performance and cocktails.
I am.
Does that give you a nice little feeling here, Nacho?
I love the end of that. That's my favourite drum part at the end of that, with the three of us playing together.
It's lovely stuff.
Great.
Kelly, here's another message for you. The Stereophonics have provided the soundtrack to my life. I've been to countless gigs. They're easily the best live band on the circuit. Got the pleasure of taking my 8-year-old twice last year, and he's become just as big a fan as I am. T-shirt Suntan's my favourite tune on Performance and Cocktails. We'd love to hear it on the next tour, Dave and West Coast. I mean, how do you leave some of these tunes out? We get asked that a lot.
Yeah, we haven't played T-shirt Suntan for a long time, but I've known, Jamie's been telling me there's been a lot of love for that online this week, so I'll have to dust that one off, I think, and get it out there.
Why did you drop them? Is it just because...
Well, it's just it's 10 albums, and you can only play for like 2 hours and a bit, so you can't fit them all in, so each album, I guess, you kind of keep the big hitters and move forward, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Keep sending your messages in 83936 at Radio X and use the hashtag Phonics Radio X. A couple of questions here. Liam in Birkenhead, he says, if you could take any song from any of your other albums and add it to Performance and Cocktails, which song would you pick to enhance it? Good question, Liam.
I guess maybe Mr. Writer.
Yes.
I think that could have probably fitted on there. It was written very much on that Performance and Cocktails too, so it wasn't long after it was written.
Yeah. It's an acoustic version, it's a B-side on one of them, isn't it?
So that could have maybe made it on there.
Good tune. About horrible journalists.
About one horrible journalist, singular, not
still,
plural.
Still holding that one.
No, I am still holding it, yeah. I mean, it was a song that took 15 minutes, but it took me about 20 years to explain.
Right, as a fellow guitarist who has covered many Stereophonics tracks over the years, what's Kelly's favourite guitar? There's always going to be a guitar question. That's David from Flitwick.
Well, I guess the guitar I was known for and the one I was always wanting to save up to buy when I was a kid is the Gibson SG, which obviously I wanted to get one because of Angus Young and AC/DC, so that's my go-to, yeah.
What's your most prized possession in the guitar stakes? Is the one that you wouldn't like me to steal?
Probably that one, the first one I bought with my own money, you know, because I had lots of copies and used to cut out the Gibson logo out of guitar magazines and masking tape them onto the top of cheap guitars, but then when we had the first album, I went into Cardiff and bought myself a proper Gibson. So, mm-hmm. and then it got wrapped around a swivel chair in the studio by one of the leads, and the head got snapped off. So I've had it glued back about 2-3 times. Yeah. So that's the wounded soldier, that one.
Has anybody bought you or gifted you a guitar?
Well, after that, like I say, the first 2-3 albums, all the guitars we bought ourselves. You know, went to New York, 48th Street, buy your first Les Paul, and all that. Chicago, you buy your first Fender Stratocaster. But then after a bit, certain companies like Fender or Gretsch, they start giving you guitars and stuff. Yeah. I got to work on TV shows, and then, but they're amazing to have, but they never feel like the one you save for yourself. You know, it's a bit like, you know, that's why I never bought a lottery ticket, because I wanted to make my own kind of luck, really. You know? Yeah.
What's the one that sits in the house that you should go to write on?
I've got a little Tanglewood in the house, which is, my old man bought me that for 60 quid in Merthyr Music before, you know, about 1994, and I wrote all of Word Guess Around and performed Scockers on that, and it's a bit of a dog to play, but it's written a lot of songs, I can tell.
God, that's got to be the most valuable one, really, isn't it? Sentimental.
I suppose it have, yeah, because it did, literally, you know, this footage of me on tour buses writing Just Looking and stuff like that with that guitar. I didn't really think about it till the other day, but yeah, that is probably the one that's got the most stories, I guess.
I should point out that there are 6 Alsatians in Kelly's house this evening.
Yeah,
and an amazing state-of-the-art security system.
Yeah.
Kelly, a nice message here from Mark in North Wales. A Minute Longer, my favourite song. This song was so underrated, much love for it. Wait, what's your view of it? Do you think it's one that's maybe overlooked?
I love the performance on Minute Longer. You know, at the time, I guess, you know, every Friday night we'd put on A Nod's As Good As A Wink by The Faces, and that was our party album, really, and when we were recording. And A Minute Longer, it's got that kind of Wurlitzer thing. And we never did that on the first record, but it was, you know, it was a very Faces kind of sound, and Marshall Bird, who's one half of Bird and Bush, who produced the record, he played that really great on that. But we never really played it live, probably once or twice. So again, that's another one we should probably stick in the set list.
Yeah. Right, Mark from North Wales, this one's for you then. Stereophonics, A Minute Longer.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
So Alex Horn here from Taskmaster, of course, the horn section. But the one that matters the most to me is Bad Golf.
Bad Golf.
Alex, what a great creation. It's providing John Robbins with a world of opportunity to pick up some very expensive kit for free.
For free, yeah. There's a slim chance not everyone's heard of Bad Golf.
We should maybe explain it.
Should I explain it? So yes. I've lived near John Robbins, the Radio X DJ and comedian. Neurotic man. A good friend. And so we played golf together quite often. And then I thought, well, he's so funny to watch playing golf. Let's film it. Yeah. So we film it. We play once a month. And it's a year-long competition.
Yeah.
And it's won all after the first 2 months. But we played the latest round yesterday. And I can give you a sneaky
I'd love to have a little preview of it.
Can you remember the weather yesterday, Gordon?
It was absolutely dreadful.
It was abysmal weather.
Awful.
And that did not affect Gordon in a... that did not affect John in a positive way. Sorry, Gordon. I was looking at you, so I said your name. It was the closest to a breakdown we've had. We didn't complete the round.
Oh, so
he unravelled in a big way, and then I had to have an apology text message from him later on. Can I read his text message?
Yes, but I would love nothing more than to hear this.
Sorry, I was really quite grumpy by the end. Had a bath now and feel ready to hit the first tee! Exclamation mark. He's back again. It's a roller coaster with Robbins.
Check out Bad Golf on YouTube. It's brilliant.
Yes,
and Instagram as well, where you will find John Robbins with lots of very expensive kit.
John's in charge of the Instagram account, and he is milking that.
Alex, you're away with the horn section at the moment as well. Can we come and see you?
You can, Gordon. We do a gig once a week. It's quite relaxing. Yeah. So we're all over the country till December. So there's dates on the website. The next ones are in April, but we're in Newcastle and Sheffield and things like that. Yeah. So yeah,
I'd love to come and see it.
Do
have a night out and maybe book some golf around it as well.
Pre and post.
Yeah, I think so. Well, yeah, and during as well.
Yeah. You did invite me on your golf.
Yeah, I did.
And I couldn't make it, but I'd love to try again.
The reason you couldn't come, if you remember, is because you were filming Taskmaster.
Literally 100 yards from where you were playing.
I don't know if you noticed, but we did try and launch a couple of drunken golf balls into the...
Brilliant.
Alex, a new series of Taskmaster. You can see it in May on Dave and UK TV Play.
That's right.
Excellent.
It's a good one. 10 episodes.
Buy the book as well.
If you want.
Yes.
There's a board game coming out.
Is there?
I think so.
Anybody got a Taskmaster tattoo yet?
Yeah. So in the book, one of the tasks is to get the best Taskmaster tattoo, and there have been many tattoos.
You're an irresponsible man, Alex.
Thank you.
And I admire you for it.
Thank you.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Stereophonics, she takes her clothes off from performance and cocktails. Kelly Jones is smiling like a naughty boy.
Yep.
Is that your Mrs. Robinson track?
Well, there's stories to be told about that song, but it's probably not best to do them on air.
Right.
But it was an interesting... lots of interesting characters in that village I grew up in.
Shall we move on, Kelly?
Yes.
Right. Here's a message from Nata. Lovely little messages. Having Stereophonics as your favourite band makes you feel like you're part of a very exclusive club when you hear the songs on the radio in particular. Thank you, Kelly, for making music for all occasions and moods, for all of the stories over the years as well. You guys truly rock. Love
Thank
hearts, rock and roll hands, all that carry on from. Thank you, Nata.
Thank you very much.
Now, Kelly, I'm writing a book, / Gordon. Can't believe I've not pestered you with this before.
Yeah.
It's about rock and roll encounters in the bathroom with famous people. Do you have a story to add to the book, please?
I got two that come to mind, actually. There was one, I was doing a TV show, and Tony Bennett was on the TV show. And,
yes.
I went into the toilet. I kind of followed him to the toilet, really, because my old man was a massive Tony Bennett fan, and I loved him. And I went to the toilet, I closed the door, and all the door was kind of like wood panelling. It was like in an old theatre in West End.
Yeah.
Like an old Channel 5 TV show. And he was having a pee, and I was having a pee next to him. And then he turned round, and he just looked, and he's like, "Where's the door, man?" Because you couldn't define which one was the door. So yeah. I had to actually help Tony Bennett out of the toilet. And he's given me a little autograph, so he was
That's
nice.
That's amazing.
But the big one, I suppose, comes to mind. We just played the Toxic Twin Towers show with Aerosmith in Wembley Stadium. And, you know, you got to remember about 12 months before we were playing pubs and we were on the bill with the Black Crowes and Lenny Kravitz. And we were playing covers by all these bands 6 months before, you know.
Yeah.
So, and the next day... Oh, no, that night. No, the next day we had to play Café de Paris with Jimmy Page and everybody. It was a big charity event, and Billy Duffy from The Cult and Aerosmith were there. We did a set, the Black Crowes did a set. So, I mean, we were blown away. These were all our favourite bands. And I went for a pee, and Tyler was in the cubicle, kind of leaning forward like that, and he was doing a slash. And I looked in, I said, "Hey, Stephen," I said, "thanks for us having on the bill today." And he goes, "Stereophonics?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Oh, man, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure." I said, "Oh, thanks very much." And I had a carried on with what I was doing, and he went out. And as I opened the door, my girlfriend at the time, Emma, who I was going out with since I was like 14, she was standing against the wall with her head like this. I said, "What's the matter with you?" She said, I asked him, could I shake his hand? And he pinned me against the wall and stuck his tongue in my mouth.
Tyler, Steve Tyler from Aerosmith. Yeah. You snogged him.
Yeah, no, she did.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, she was very windswept when I came out. Yeah.
Because actually, Stephen Tyler, you feature in another story.
Me?
Yeah, at the Brit Awards, there was a dust-up in the toilets, and apparently Stephen Tyler walked out as a fight was kicking off. The cooks were involved, you were there, and Steve Tyler just came out and went, "Hey, guys, just calm down." And you were involved in the ruckus.
Well, I might have been. I've got another story regarding a toilet and a ruckus, actually. That was with Peter Hook.
Yeah?
Yeah, this was one of my first ever Q Awards, and I didn't know who Peter Hook was in the toilet, right?
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, I love the band," and I said, "Oh, cheers." And he goes, "No, I know." I said, "Oh, cheers, I," and I just carried on. And he goes, "Do you not know who I am, man?" And I go in, "No, I don't. I was brought up with like AC/DC and all that."
Yeah.
I said, "Why?" And he goes, "You've been funny me, what?" I said, "No." And then he kind of pushed me against the wall. I said, "No, genuinely, man, I don't know who you are." I said, "I'm not being funny. I'm sorry, but I was brought up with like the Eagles and all that." I didn't have the Joy Division collection. I love it now, but I didn't.
Oh, mate, that's brilliant.
Yeah, that scared me to death, that did.
Well, you're one of my Slash Gordons as well, because we had a night out in Camden many moons ago, and you had a massive scrap with a bouncer, and I ended up covered in your blood. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've got your DNA in my shirt somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was a dark night.
That was a dark night.
That was a dark night. Anyway, we will move on from that. Right, we've got another tune coming up from Performance and Cocktails, and more chat from Kelly.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Stereophonics, Plastic California, Performance and Cocktails, Kelly Jones. What a beauty of a tune that is.
I love that one. Yeah, it's good bass line in that, Richard.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
Got to give everyone a nod, really, haven't we, for
we
that
have,
time?
Yeah.
And Stuart, of course, who we have to mention.
Well, you know, the three of us were like three brothers, so it was an amazing period of time, and V2 Records obviously were amazing, and Bird and Bush, they found us in the Borderline, so as a unit, we put out some good stuff.
It's amazing you'd think about that, and you've got amazing stories to recall with those boys.
Yeah.
But to see the messages tonight, thanks very much for them as well, 83936 and at Radio X, keep them coming in. It's hard to get through them all. There's one particular message here from Travis, and it kind of catches the theme of a lot of the songs. His dad had a brain tumour, had an operation, and lost a lot of his memory, and he said to him tonight when he was talking to him that he's got Kelly Jones coming in, and he just said, "Dakota,
Dakota.
Really?
So last thing he did with his dad before he had an operation was go to karaoke and he sang Dakota.
No way.
And it's like it's programmed into people's lives, really emotional stories, which must touch you.
Music is really, like we were talking about, man, it's a very, very powerful thing. And it takes you to many places in your mind, doesn't it? You know, it's incredible, really.
You're of a generation in this band where a lot of your career together has been filmed, right? So since 96 there's good footage, so it leads on to the question that there must be a supersonic style Coldplay movie,
we are making a film. We've been making a film for 25 years. Everything that we've ever done has been filmed, and we've been collaborating with Ben Lowe, does a lot of the BBC shorts and stuff like that. So we're piecing it together. The editing is the difficult part because there's much footage.
Where'd you start?
Well, we're trying to work out where the beginning is, really. Do you start at the end and then go back to the beginning? But it's an ongoing story, isn't it? But it's some amazing footage, isn't it? Especially when we started out in like the Columbia Hotel and all stuff like that. It's amazing how much is on film, really.
That's a picture that I love of you with Tom Jones in the Met Bar, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's got a massive cigar on, glass of champagne, but you've got tracksuits on.
We got those 90 woolen jumpers that always had the different colour, two-tone shoulders and stuff.
It's terrible stuff. Kings of Leon came in not long ago, and they told this great story about how they have to censor their lyrics for their kids, right? Obviously their socks are on fire.
Yeah.
Are there songs that you're going to have to maybe have a different view of when they ask, Dad, listen, what's that tune all about? She takes her clothes off, Dad. What's that all about?
Yeah, my daughters have come to a few shows. When we do Superman, there's a few F's and blinds in that one, and I do kind of duck off the mic a bit when it does become a little bit embarrassing at that point. But now they're at the age where they kind of understand it, so I've got over that little lump now.
Yeah. Well, we've looked back 20 years, Kelly. Can we just have a little look ahead before you go tonight? You know, what's in store? What can we see from you in the next year?
Well, we've got a bunch of festivals and gigs coming up in May, obviously, which we've put up on sale and stuff. So that's just... and what else are we doing? We'll start recording a new album next week, so I'm excited about that. We're doing that with George DeCoulias, who did a lot of the Primal Scream and Black Crowes, Tom Petty stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do that, and hopefully we can get something out at the end of this year, but all going well. But the songs are all written, so it's just a matter of capturing it all now.
I haven't seen you since Chaos from the Top Down. You know, sounds like you've got a lot to write about.
Yeah, I mean, that was a track I'd written about a year ago, and I demoed it with a few different people, and it was just sitting there, really, and so much going on in the news, I just thought, well, if it doesn't come out now, I don't really know when it's going to go out. Thankfully, this station particularly played there a lot for us, so it was, you'd write about what's going on, and I've always done that. It's just another song, really.
You've got a young daughter, birthday party at the weekend. Is this your Peppa Pig album?
I haven't got that yet. No, I haven't got that.
Is that doing your head in at the moment, all that stuff? Or are you secretly quite enjoying it?
Well, she's into a lot of different stuff, really. She's into Morph at the minute, and I'm into that.
Morph's great.
Yeah, Morph's all right. The problem with Morph is you've got to keep pressing play every minute and a half, because it's not for very long, but it does take me back to Tony Hart. I quite like Morph and Chas, you know.
Oh, they're cracking lads, aren't they? Well, listen, Kelly, thanks so much for this tonight. It's nice looking back over 20 years. We've got one last question that's been asked a million times tonight.
Yeah.
Pick one song. What's your favourite from Performance and Cocktails?
Probably Plastic California.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a cool track to play live. We don't play live very often.
And this is a recurring theme, Kelly.
It is. And Hurry Up and Wait is another one. Yeah. But apart from that, they're all right. That's a good record.
Well, listen, Kelly, thanks so much for tonight. Massively appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Cheers for the tunes. Cheers for the memories.
Thank you. Thanks for the support.
Brilliant. And of course, the memories that I can't remember.
Yes, well, they are the most important ones to forget, aren't they?
The one and only Kelly Jones. Remember, follow the conversation, hashtag Phonics Radio X. Kelly was our guest tonight, and I'm sure this will appear somewhere digitally for you to enjoy if you missed some tonight. Right, finishing us off tonight, just more beautiful stuff from Stereophonics. Stop to fill the car.
Stop to fill my car up.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
So Kelly, we were talking about the B-sides, right? Yeah. You're six songs most of the time, and sometimes 12-inch vinyl, which we'd have had, two tracks on each side, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
You had two brilliant B-sides in Just Looking. I think it was a Bob Dylan and a Kurt Cobain cover. I mean, Nirvana was still a massive part of people's lives in 98, 99, wasn't it? So why were you inspired to choose the particular song you chose?
Well, being a three-piece, Nirvana, The Jam, all those kinds of bands, they had a massive energy that we kind of, used to play covers by in bars and stuff like that, so... I was in college when Nevermind came out, and I remember where I was in college when he died as well, you know, so it was like, I remember that scene for real, how people were dressing, what they were doing in the clubs and stuff like that. So something, the way I always loved it, I always used to love the way that his voice used to kind of, you know, almost go in the chorus and stuff like that. And very influenced really by, you know, the old blues guy Lead Belly, those chord changes. People don't realise, but it goes back a long way, that kind of darkness, you know what I mean? It's a very cool track.
And as a lyricist, I suppose Bob Dylan's got to be still held up as the number one, hasn't he?
Well, Positively 4th Street, I think, is the cover we did, and that was... that was on the jukebox in the Ivy Bush. So after every rehearsal on a Thursday night, we go to the pub, and that was the one record I'd put on. And when the pub closed down, the guy, Graham, who owned the pub, gave me the single. So I love that track. I mean, Dylan is, you know, he's the Shakespeare of rock and roll, isn't he?
You are a bit of a hoarder, aren't you?
I've got a lot of crap.
I've seen a great clip in what must be your study or your music room.
Oh, when I just moved in the house.
Cassettes.
Boxes and
I mean, does that not drive your missus crazy, or is it?
Yeah, it's not like that now. That was like 2 days after we moved in, so I've smartened that up a little bit now.
Have you got it all like properly?
No, I'm not a filer. I'm not a guy that can do anything like that in order. I've got bags within bags of stuff like that, but I've kept a lot of it. My old man goes nuts because I was sticking up the attic in the house in Wales, you know. But
he could get a good price for it in the pub.
Probably could, yeah. Radio X.